Yes, Monsieur Dicker? Monsieur Dicker, my radiator has gone cold, and there is a... Well, then the boiler must be repaired. After Christmas? That is most unsatisfactory. I don't... I see. Au revoir, Monsieur Dicker. Yes.
Hercule Poirot?
Yes, it is I, Hercule Poirot, who speaks.
I need a detective to come and stay here in my house for Christmas.
Now, don't say no just like that. Hear me out. Superintendent Sugden of the Shropshire Police recommended you.
I do not know
him. I don't care if you don't know him. He knows you.
My life is in danger.
Have you received any threats, Monsieur?
Simeon Lee. Oh, well, you'd have to be here to understand.
Tell to me, if you please, Monsieur Lee. Does your house have the central heating?
What? Yes, of course.
Very well. Poirot will be there tomorrow. Give to me, if you please, your address.
My soul, three ships come sailing in on Christmas.
Hello, happy holidays, and welcome to Book vs. Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
Well, we are winding down 2021. For those of you who are new, and we know we have a lot of new members, and if you saw the title of today's episode, maybe you're listening for the very first time. Maybe you're joining us because you're a big fan of Agatha Christie, as we are. So this is, a podcast where we talk about books that are adapted into movies. But since we've been in this pandemic time, we've been doing a brand new episode every single week. So sometimes we do literary sources that are shorter, like a magazine article or a children's book or a song even, or a play. Because we've been doing a new episode every week, we sometimes run out of ideas. And so we are really happy that we have a growing community of listeners. Very grateful for all of you out there who make your suggestions to us in the various places where you can find us on the internet.
You could reach out to us. We have a basic Facebook page on Facebook. You can leave suggestions there, leave questions there. We also have a private Facebook group, and it's a really good place to interact with other fans of the show. And we should make it clear, like, the book should be pretty easy to get either on the Libby app or on Kindle. The movie needs to be streamable. Our movie today is streamable. I found it on Amazon, BritBox, not realizing there's 12 copies on YouTube.
That's true. They're not a sponsor, we should say.
Right.
Neither Amazon nor BritBox. Although I just want to say I also have BritBox and I freaking love it.
Yes, it's the best.
I also watched it on BritBox. But yes, this is super, super easy to find.
Yes. So that has to be there. If you have to buy this movie off eBay or something, we just can't do it. So just to keep that in mind. And on Twitter and Instagram, we're at Book vs. Movie. Just spell it all out. And if you want to send us an email instead, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. And we do have a stack of stickers and magnets. If you would like some, we will drop them in the mail for you, and you could just show your loyalty to the show that way.
We really, really appreciate it. And if you really enjoy Book vs. Movie and you want to help us stay in books and movies and keep things running around here, you can join us on Patreon.
Yes, we do have a Patreon page. We're putting up episodes from 2019 and then previous to that up onto the Patreon wall. There's also a bunch of stuff there that's free. So feel free to check it out. Excuse me. It's Patreon. And it's really helpful just to help us get the books and the movies, but also pay for the hosting costs for putting on the show. So thank you so much. The latest episode that just went up there was Wizard of Oz. Really great movie, great book, and a really fun episode to do. Just to give you an idea, The Godfather just went up there, Practical Magic. We've just got really fun ones up there. So thank you, everyone. And that's a way to support us. But if money is tight and we understand, just leave us a review someplace or share us on social media or just tell a friend about the show.
Yeah, that's great. We love that. We've had a lot of great suggestions on our Facebook group lately that are episodes that we've already done, which are on our Patreon, because we've been doing this for 7 years. Although I always say, like, we're not experts in books or movies. We're not literature majors or anything like that. But yeah, we have been doing this for quite a long time, at least in the podcasting world. It's been a while. Now, we've never done, we've done Agatha Christie before.
Murder on the Orient Express. Yes.
And we did Poirot. That's a Poirot book. But we did not do, did we do Albert Finney? Was that the version that we did?
Albert Finney.
It was not the David Suchet.
Right.
Which, in my opinion, is the superior version. But today, we are definitely talking about David Suchet. We are going to be talking about Poirot's Christmas. Now, I actually listened to the audiobook. I got it on my Libby app from San Diego County Library. Did you listen to it or did you read
it? I got mine from the Brooklyn Library.
Was yours also Hugh Fraser?
Yes, he's great.
Oh, he's wonderful. So
he slept to it a couple of times.
He's the actor who plays Captain Hastings in the series, although he's not in this episode. It's a fantastic performance. I mean, he obviously intimately acquainted with the material, and he does a great job of doing all the different voices and accents that are in this story.
Yes. We should talk about our author, and Margot had mentioned, we're not experts. People spend their entire academic careers talking about Agatha Christie, or even probably Poirot, for all I know. But she was born 1890 in England. She's the third best-selling author in the world after the Bible and Shakespeare.
And Shakespeare.
Yes. I mean,
so she is, in fact, the best-selling novelist in the world.
Absolutely,
yeah,
she's the best-selling.
Take that, J.K. Rowling.
She's written plays. The longest-running play, The Mousetrap, is her creation.
Over 50 years in running.
Yes, and she's done short stories. I mean, this woman is brilliant. Poirot was her first character that she created. Was one of the characters she used him many, many times. At times she was sick of him, and that's why we have Miss Marple and we have other people that she brings in. She was a bit fussy and egocentric. Really interesting woman. She had kind of a basic life of an English girl. She gets married. World War I happens. Her husband serves. She's like volunteering. She starts writing. Her first book is published in 1920. And then she has this real big issue that her husband has an affair on her and she has all kinds of problems and she sort of disappears. And then she comes back from this and she needed a break. That's all. It was a little self-care moment that she needed. That's all. But when she came back, she came super, super famous. She marries a man that basically was an excavator, and he went to ancient sites around the world, and she went with him. They learned to surf in Hawaii in like the 1930s. Like,
yeah, she's just a lady stand-up surfer. That's all.
That's,
novelist,
yeah.
Archaeologist, global traveler.
Yes.
I mean, she's a superhero.
She really, really is. And I'm telling you, like, I don't always read a lot of mysteries. My mom was a huge mystery fan. But Agatha Christie just does it exceptionally well. And you just, a wonderful writer, amazing plots. And it's just, this is a story that's set on Christmas Day. And our hero is Hercule Poirot. And that's a character that she created. He has his loyalty to England, but people are always assuming he's French, and he's not. He's fastidious.
Yeah, it's like a running gag.
He is.
People always try to insult him that he's French and he's like, actually, I'm Belgian.
And he won't have it. Yes. He is 5'4". It's various descriptions of him being bald and not bald, but kind of a round shaped body, particular way of talking about himself in the third person and all these
super fastidious.
Yes, that's a good word. Yeah. Fastidious. And he is just, he says he uses his little gray cells, meaning his brains, to figure things out. This is old-fashioned. This is not CSI stuff. You know, this is not, he doesn't even check for fingerprints. I mean, he's really just going in a hunch and moving forward.
There's just a lot of things about, Agatha Christie, as I said, we are such huge fans. But the thing about her work, there's a lot of really amazing things about her work. First of all, you have these two characters, these two great sleuths of Poirot and Miss Marple. And what I really like about both of them is they work in completely different worlds. You know, Poirot's stories are always taking place among the upper crust, these glamorous people who on the surface seem to have no problems and not a care in the world. And all you do is lift up the first little rock you see and there's all kinds of creepy crawly things that come out of mm-hmm. there. And then Miss Marple, she works in the more kind of country, casual village setting, you know, not the upper crust people. They are the the middle class, lower working classes that she's solving mysteries about them. And so their worlds don't really collide very much, Miss Marple and Poirot. I watched so many documentaries. Did you watch so many documentaries about Agatha? I could watch them all day long.
Yeah.
And it's so fun. Just, you know, we've been home. It's cold. It's Christmassy. I watched this very, it was a very thin premise, I have to say, but for a documentary. But basically, the whole point of the documentary was, why are Agatha Christie's novels so engaging? Why can't we put them down? And so they had all these academics who were studying, like they had all these computer programs. They tried to make it look all like dramatic, which was to people sitting at computers is all it was. Anyway, there were several things that were really interesting. Apart from just the settings and the way she pulls you into those worlds is so exciting always. And but also like they compared her work to, they analyzed it in comparison to like Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote Sherlock Holmes. And one thing that was very different was the way that they described the action. So where Sherlock Holmes will say, when did you get back? She answered 3 o'clock. And Agatha Christie, it'll say, when did you get back? He asked. 3 o'clock, she said. Not that she answered. Not that she answered his question or that is the answer to the question, but that's what she said. So it may or may not be true. So she has a completely different way that she's using the language. Mm-hmm. And also the pacing of her novels, they start slow and they get faster and faster and faster the closer you get to the conclusion. So at the end, you are just rocketing through theories and it could have been this and it could have been you and it could have been you and it could have been everybody. And here's why. And no, but we know it's none of you people. It's only this person. And that's what's so, that's what that kind of addictive quality of her writing. And she's just brilliant at creating characters that, you somehow, she's not exactly poking fun at them, but you see the foolishness of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And yet you empathize with them. It's just like nobody else does.
Yeah.
There's just nobody like her. And Poirot is the perfect example. I mean, in many ways, he's a ridiculous little man, but he's the smartest guy on earth.
He sticks out like a sore thumb. He doesn't blend in, but people often underestimate him because of his height and because of like his, you know, fussy attitudes about things. This is a story. She passed away, by the way, in 1976, and she's one of England's greatest treasures. This story was written in December of 1938, and our Poirot is home and he gets a call, and it's for a rich man that says to him, can you come to my home for Christmas? I'm going to be having a confrontation with my family and I want somebody with me.
Yeah. In the book, it's a little bit different. In the book, I'm not quite clear. In the book, Poirot is staying with a local police person or something for mm-hmm. Christmas. And the police officer, the police chief or whatever his position is, he gets pulled into this local story about the rich man, Mr. Simeon, the diamond merchant, who is a real jerk.
He is such a creep. This guy is the worst. And he lords it over his family that he has money and they don't, and they're waiting for him to die. And he enjoys tweaking at them a little bit. There's a lot said about, well, Pilar is sort of our introduction to this. So Pilar is she's Spanish born, right?
Yeah, there's Harry, yes. Alfred, George, 3 or 4 sons.
Mm-hmm. David.
And a daughter, Jennifer. Right. And Jennifer has died. But Jennifer had, everybody was estranged from everybody else. Jennifer has died. And she has a daughter, Pilar, by this Spanish fellow. But the baddie, the patriarch of the family, Mr. Simeon, right up from the outset says, like, I'm a terrible person. I probably have kids all over the freaking place and I have no idea. These are the ones that by my wife, you know, these are the ones who are my heirs. But they're, you know, I don't really think much of them. And
he doesn't respect them. You know,
he's dreadful.
He says, I know I have kids. I know I have sons all over the world that I've never met that are better than the ones I have here. They just happen to be born on the wrong side of the blanket, as he likes to say. He's a creep. And Poirot is brought into the story because he's going to confront his kids, basically, and he wants some backup.
I was going to say all of his children, his legitimate children, that is, all of his children are estranged from him because he's alienated all of them except for one who is sort of his caretaker. He and his wife, Alfred, and his wife look after this big house that they live in. But he only does it. He only does it out of a sense of, you know, just the most basic obligation and duty. It's not because he likes his father or, you know, his father is nice to him or anything. His father's horrible to him. Yeah. And one of the things I think is so great throughout the book is every single person who's in this story, at some point there's a conversation of like, why did we even come here? He's awful.
As rich as he is. But with our introduction with Pilar, who comes through the train by train to there, she's like, oh, I've always wondered what England's like and what it'd be like in the countryside at Christmas. Must be cozy. And she's like, these are the most joyless people. This is a dreary atmosphere. This house is just dreadful. It just feels cold and oppressive. And this man rules. He loves it. He loves that. The Simeon is just one of the worst characters. You just hate him right away because he just treats everybody like garbage. And
he
staff
doesn't
is scared
care.
Of him. Yes.
He has no stakes. Like, he does not care. He's like, yeah, I cheated everybody. Yeah, I stole from people. Yeah, I slept around. And yeah, my wife's dead. And let me say some more bad things about my wife who's dead, who's your mother, by the way.
That you loved.
Know, it's horrible.
Yeah. He's terrible. And there's all these things about how he had diamonds, rough diamonds, and he has money. And he knows that the second he dies, they're going to fight over the money. So they're always wondering, like, what's in the will? Who's in the will? Are you in the will? Am I in the will? Should Pilar be in the will? Should she not be in the will? Of course, he gets stabbed and in a locked room. Nobody can get into this room. It's barricaded. And
he is locked in as though he's locked himself in this room
and stabbed himself.
All the furniture is everywhere. And one of the things that's different from in the book than the movie, which I appreciate, frankly, is that in the book, they go on and on and on about how much blood there is.
Yes, I agree.
In the film, there's just he's stabbed, which is grisly enough. And everything topsy turvy in the room. In the book, though, she goes on at great length in tremendous detail. It's a very, very big deal. And this is another thing about Agatha Christie that's so cool. Todd and I were just talking about this the other night that, you know, with Sherlock Holmes, he always sees the solution like right away. And when you, the reader, are reading it, you're like, I would never have thought of that. How did he notice that? Wow, that's amazing that he picked that up. In an Agatha Christie story, she is dropping clues to you all the time so that when Poirot gives the solution, you're not dazzled by how he picked that up. You go, oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't notice. Oh, that's she did say that. And that did happen. That's a clue that she is going on so much about so much blood. And there's lots of little clues that she's using in the way that she's describing things and the little offhand things that people say. You're getting clues all the time. So you're kind of in on it with Poirot all the time, which is another very, you know, again, the thing that pulls you in right away.
Exactly. They must have hit an artery or something. I mean, it's like it's just spurting blood everywhere.
It's grisly.
It's very, very gruesome. This is Christmas Eve that this happens. And so that's part of the reason, like, okay, Poirot has to, again, get everybody brought to the house. And they're trying to figure out it's a mess. How did anybody get in here? Who would have, you know, well, everybody has motive, but who would have the ability? Where were you when this happened? Where were you when that happened? And Pilar is eventually, we'll talk more about this with the movie. I actually really did enjoy this movie. I thought it was pretty.
It's so good.
It was
it's
super
so well
great.
Done.
We'll talk about more of that. But basically, we'll kind of just go to it, is that, Pilar is attacked next and in the house. Almost killed, but not. Like, they interrupted it. Like, she's being whacked on the head. And then we find out that Pilar isn't exactly who she says she is. that she, I think it was a drunk driving accident or car accident, but she took someone's identity.
Which again, she described earlier in the book that she had been in this accident. But what we find out is that she was in an accident with the real Pilar, who was her friend, and mm-hmm. the real Pilar dies. And this woman, whose real name is Conchita something, mm-hmm. decides, well, you know, nobody knows what
she looks like,
what Pilar looks like. And I could pass for Pilar, and yeah, hey, it'd be fun. What a lark to go have a traditional English Christmas.
They're rich. It should be really fun.
In a manor house.
Yeah. And then she gets
what
knocked.
What could possibly go wrong?
And he dies. And then the next day she gets knocked out and almost killed. And we find out, he finds that there's a little rubber thing, rubber circle thingy on the floor.
Yeah, a little ring. Yeah.
Little ring. And then he goes to town, and there's like a card shop where they sell gag gifts. And somebody sells balloons, and the balloons make this horrible sound. He basically figures out that one of the sons, well, there's a big portrait of Simeon when you walk into the house, and all the sons resemble one another, but there's one super, not a super inspector, but he's superintendent.
So, and again, there's just so many great things about this book. It was such a delight. One of the things I loved is that, and this is true, I think, probably of all of the, especially the Poirot books, with the exception of possibly the first one, you go in as a reader, you go in as an insider, that you kind of already know that Poirot is the way that he is, that he has these little mincing steps and that he's so fussy about everything. You also know that Poirot is very well respected and very well, he's always, you know, he's already famous. Everybody already knows who he is. He's so famous that people know him by sight in the 1930s. Like, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You also know that he has a lot of experience when he's solving these cases. And they're generally very high profile cases because they're very rich people usually, that he's used to working with local law enforcement. So it's very normal for him to, if he happens to be, even if he's on vacation somewhere, even if it's Christmas,
yeah,
if there's a murder happening and he's around, like the police usually, unlike with Miss Marple, usually the police are only delighted to have Poirot there to help them solve this mystery. Because it usually their necks are on the line because the big wig in the town has gotten killed. And, you know, if they don't solve the mystery, that's real bad for them. So they're usually happy to have Poirot on hand. So you don't really... nobody thinks it's odd that, like, of course the police officer is there on Christmas.
Right.
At the rich guy's house. Nobody questions that.
And that's superintendent, Sugden? I don't know.
Sugden?
Sugden, S-U-G-D-E-N. When he shows up at one point, the butler of the house, like, was startled to see him. And it's because he resembles the younger version of Simeon when he was, you know, a hot guy, hot young guy, when he had this huge portrait taken. It turns out his mother was one of the women that he had an affair with, we could say it.
Yes. In the book, and this is a little bit different too. In the book, there's two illegitimate sons. Who's the other one? I'm forgetting who the other one is. I know there's two of them. One is there. He's supposedly the son of Simeon's ex-partner from South Africa in the diamond mines.
Yes.
But he's actually Simeon's illegitimate son from South Africa. In the movie, that's treated a little bit differently. And also in the movie, the Sugden's origin story is also different. In the book, Sugden is the illegitimate son of a local village woman that Simeon slept with.
Simeon slept with a lot of women.
He was busy.
He was busy.
He was busy cheating people and sleeping with women, basically.
So in order to enact revenge for his mother is that he set up for him to be killed, and he set up with a series of pulleys and stuff that once
he's a police officer.
Yeah.
He knows all the tricks.
He knew the tricks of the trade.
He also, and this is the other, the way that she puts the little clues throughout the story is just, it's so fun. It's so fun to read. One of the things that they say about the father, Simeon, yes, he's off. He's horrible. He's horrible, horrible, horrible. And he is a grudge holder. And he kind of doesn't care how long it takes. You know, if he thinks that you did something, you got something on him, he's going to get his revenge. He doesn't, you know, it could take 40 years. He's going to get you. And so that's a character trait of the family, right? So she, you see traits that the father has in various forms in all of the sons. And in this case, you know, the Sugden, the police lieutenant or inspector, to such an extent that he goes through, assuming he goes through police academy, like he has a whole law enforcement career.
He's thinking the long game.
Years and years. Yeah. All building up to this one, to creating this perfect murder of this man that he felt he had been wronged by. It's such a fun story.
Poirot, you know, he carefully explains to everybody how he did that and then that he hit Pilar / Conchita. In the end, Conchita, and I think it's David that she has like a flirtation with on the train.
So in the book, Conchita gets married to the guy who was posing as the partner's son, who was actually Simeon's illegitimate son. So he's a brother to all the rest of them. And so when it turns out like, oh, Pilar, you're not really Pilar, so we're not really related. Let's get married.
And do you like South Africa? And she's like, sure.
Yeah, sure.
And they head off together. And then that Poirot goes off to his merry way until he finds another rich family to take care of. But that's that story. We then move on to Agatha Christie's. There's this Miss Marple series. I wish my mother were alive and with us. She would enjoy this conversation so much because my mom loved Agatha Christie and she loved BritBox and she loved all of these stories and watched them so much. It was really fun watching that because it made me think of her. But the Agatha Christie Poirot series ran from, I believe it's 89 until... It was
like 25 years.
Yes, it was over 25 years.
Yeah.
And
a very long time.
Yeah. And it starred David Suchet. And I love this description that he gave when he was talking about his characterization. He said, I like to picture him trying to balance coins under his bum as he's walking to get that very tight, funny little walk that he had. And he was in character apparently every second he was on set.
Like, yeah,
that's how he
achieved
it.
There are stories of him, and which when I first heard that, I was like, really? But then I heard him. He was in an interview, and he was asked to tell several stories of occasions. You know, they would go to these little villages to shoot these murder mysteries because these big manor houses, they have all these little villages that are around that are the support system for the manor back in the day, and. And so David Suchet, you know, he's in a padded suit. He's in costume. It takes a long time to get into all that. So he's not going to get out of that between takes. And so he would be sitting in his costume in this village and the people who lived there would walk up and go, oh, Mr. Poirot. And like, what is he supposed to do? Be like, oh yeah, hey, but how's it going? You know, he knew like he felt very protective of that image on behalf of, you know, the Christie estate. And so he would respond as Poirot. Yeah. And so, you know, people would walk up, they go, oh no, nobody's been murdered, have they? You know, and he would always stay in character. Now the other actors didn't do that. It was only David Suchet who did that, but I just adore his Poirot so much. We talked about Murder on the Orient Express.
Right.
Again, we talked about the Albert Finney, which I also really loved. And I love Peter Ustinov. I'm not completely on board yet with the Branagh Poirot.
And there's
a little too cut and built and action hero-y for me.
Poirot, like we said, was supposed to be a petite man but chubby, like tiny and
he's a
sometimes
mental
he's bald
force.
Yes. And I think Branagh wasn't going for that. I'm interested. I will see
me too.
You know,
oh, absolutely.
Death on the Nile. It's been, but because of COVID and stuff, there's just been a lot of, you know, problems with the release date. But let's play this little, not really a trailer, but a sort of like a peek at the episode.
A little promo.
And then we'll get right into it.
For most people, Christmas is the time of year of peace and joy.
Who is this murderer we keep hearing about?
But that's for most people.
There is a case against every person.
And before he can finish opening up his presents...
He was killed by his own flesh and blood.
Inspector Hercule Poirot unwraps yet another murder case.
You must find out who did this awful thing, Mr. Poirot.
David Suchet stars in Hercule Poirot's Christmas, tonight at 8 on Hallmark.
This actually aired on Christmas Day, 1994, for the first time.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
We open with young Simeon, so we don't have that from the book.
Such a good opening.
I love the opening. Oh my God.
We should say when they made these, I will call them, you know, late 20th century Agatha Christie series. So there's an Agatha Christie's Miss Marple series and an Agatha Christie's Poirot series. They, you know, they changed the stories a little bit, which I think is such a great decision. I mean, they kept it very much in the vein of her style. What's great is if you're an Agatha Christie fan, you're not going, oh yeah, this is the guy that did the, you know, oh, you know, you're still guessing. You still kind of don't quite know how it's going to unfold. And so to take this tactic, which is not in the book at all, and open it with Simeon as a young man in South Africa is so brilliant. I just love it so much.
You meet him and he's with a friend, somebody he meets on the road, and they're talking about...
He's like a partner.
Yeah.
They're young men seeking their fortunes in South Africa. And
handsome.
And when you see them, they don't seem to have gone very far.
Yeah.
They're handsome, yes, but they're young and they're broke.
Young and broke, and they've got these rough cut diamonds with them. And we find out, basically, I mean, these are spoilers, by the way. Maybe we should have said that at first. There you go.
Oops.
But Scott Handy, I love him. He plays young Simeon, and he stabs to death the other guy to steal the jewels from him.
Right. And as it's a little bit like, it's a little Treasure of the Sierra Madre. So you have these guys, and supposedly we're best buds, and we're partners, and we're in this together. But in the middle of the night, Simeon gets up to stab the partner. And the partner, as he's being stabbed, shoots Simeon in the arm. And so, okay, Simeon's got the diamonds, but he's also got a bullet wound in his arm, and he's in the middle of nowhere in South Africa.
And he meets this woman, Stella. She has a port wine stain on her face. And she's sort of like, all right, she heals him. She sews him up and gives him takes the bullet out and sort of like, all right, what's your deal? And he's just sort of like, oh, you know, just a traveling, I'm, you know, just a guy, like, just figuring out his life. And she's like, uh-huh. They basically have an affair. And then he just takes off in the middle of the night and leaves her. And she's yelling, Simeon!
With nothing but a baby.
Nothing but a baby. And she's out there. And then we flash forward, and it's 1938, and they take it to England. And then the various family members are showing up. And you meet older Simeon, and that actor's Vernon Dobchev. He's so good. He's so evil.
He's so terrible.
He's so creepy. There's a scene where his son and daughter come into the room, and she's trying to talk to him, and he's in a wheelchair, and he looks at her, he just goes, are you going to straighten my leg now? Just to watch her, like, oh.
Just to humiliate her.
Just to do
it. I know.
It. He just delights in saying things to them like, okay, lawyer, pretending he's on the phone with his lawyer, talk to you on Boxing Day about changing my will.
Yeah, so basically he invites all of his kids and his one grandchild that he knows about to the house just to mess with them about the will, because he knows that's all they care about.
Yeah.
He's like, everybody come up to my room. Oh, hold on, I've just got to take this phone call. Hello, Mr. Lawyer. Yeah, please talk to me in 2 days about changing my will.
just to make them suffer. Right after he does that, he then calls Poirot, David Suchet's Poirot, and Poirot is at home. He's making meals. He's happy. And then he realizes that his radiator, I have radiators in my apartment, when they break, it stinks.
That's bad.
It's bad.
In the wintertime.
Yeah. It's really hot or it's not. Like, that's what happens. And as he's talking to him on the phone, he just says to he says, well, do you have indoor heating? And he says, well, yeah, of course. All right, fine. And he immediately goes. Then Simeon's mean to him, you know, just sizes him up.
He's
like, you're
nice.
Supposed to protect me.
Still the same ugly old dump.
You don't look very tough.
Hercule Poirot is a detective, not a bodyguard, monsieur.
Oh, is he? Got a brain, has he? Oh, good thing somebody has. All my sons are complete nincompoops. I've probably got better sons scattered all over the world. Born on the wrong side of the blanket. My family hate me, you know.
It is not hard to see why, Monsieur Lee.
They're frightened of me.
It is often the way with men who are old and rich.
Well, anyway, I'm going to make an announcement this evening, and then they'll have good cause to hate me. What do you want?
He wanted to see Miss Estravada, sir. She's outside.
All right. One more minute.
What is it that you wish me to do here, Monsieur Lee?
Keep your eyes open. Keep your ears open.
Bien, what am I looking for? What am I listening for?
You'll know when it happens.
And he's like, I'm not a bodyguard. I'm a detective. Poirot is here to take care of you. And he realizes these people stink. This is, and their heating is actually, their situation's not that much better. It's pretty drafty. And it's wonderful art direction. Like this house, just you could feel how oppressive it is. And
it's just cold and dark and nighttime all the time for some reason.
Yes.
And is just, oh yeah, it just feels drafty and ugh.
Yes. And when he meets Pilar, he's very lascivious. I'm talking about Simeon here, like a little lascivious with her. He's gross.
His granddaughter,
he thinks. He's just super, super duper gross. And everyone's miserable because of him. And it's Christmas and no one's in a mood. You know, no one talks about presents or, you know, the little treats that you
pop
open.
They don't like
open.
Each other.
No.
They
don't trust
Nobody's
each other.
Nobody's happy to see anybody. They don't trust each other. Nothing. No.
They're just a big pasty misery, these people. And they're just, and then what happens, and it's very good. It's really interesting direction. But like you hear people eating. You can hear people cracking nuts into their plates. You can hear chairs moving. Like it's, you could just hear everything happening in this house. And then all of a sudden it's this boom. And then furniture falling. And it's the loud sound, everybody can feel it. It's like an explosion in the room. And then they go up the stairs and they kind of have to battering ram it with furniture to come in. And that's where we find Simeon dead. And he's been stabbed to death. And it's not as gruesome as it is in the novel.
In the book. No, it's not. But it's still pretty, you know, I mean,
it's intense.
A stabbed
he's
old man. And the safe is empty. And the furniture is all over the place. as though he had been in a struggle. This feeble old man had been in a struggle with his assailant.
Right.
Who we don't know how they got into a locked room that's been locked from the inside, and the doors don't, I mean, the windows don't open. So whodunit?
Whodunit? And as they're, and the police chief comes into, Chief Inspector Chap comes into town. They're all talking to each other, and he finds pieces of evidence on the floor, which is like the little rubber ring and the stopper.
Yeah.
And
so that's different. Again, that's a different thing than the book at all. In the book, you don't see Chief Inspector Japp is from Scotland Yard, who is in a lot of the books that Poirot is works with him. And they have this really fun relationship. And again, like, you're watching this as sort of an insider, so you kind of know what their relationship is. They really respect each other, but they're completely different kinds of men. Chief Inspector Japp is also having a miserable Christmas because he's stuck with his in-laws, who are extremely boring people. And so Poirot is like, well, I'll call up my friend Japp, see if he wants to
help me out with the case,
his in-laws, and help me on this case.
And he's like, yes. House.
He's like, okay.
I got a murder.
Can I be there?
Sorry. Gotta go. And they
then we also have Sugden, who's the local guy.
This is a thing, key thing. Like, they do all kind of look alike. That's, I think that's just part of
they did
of
a good job.
They did a very good job of casting it.
Of doing a resemblance and, a combination of casting and makeup maybe. But they, and also having the young Simeon, like the guy who plays young Simeon really, really looks like, when you see him, like at first I thought it was the same actor.
I did too. I thought they put old age makeup on him.
Very similar.
Yeah. So it's good. It's super well done. Poirot's interviewing everybody. Poirot goes into town and he finds the shop where they sell like exploding balloons and mustaches and things like that. And not his thing, but he's just curious and he gathers evidence as he goes. I love the fact that he gets Christmas present and it's these gloves. And he's just like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Inspector Japp. He's like, you see, like David Suchet, again, like the thing about Poirot and Miss Marple, too, but like they really, and this is, again, my beef about the Branagh, I just have a really bad attitude about the Branagh Prado. And I love Kenneth Branagh. I think he's wonderful. But that role is it's such a character actor's role, which is why your Peter Ustinov is such a great choice. You know, I love every single Miss Marple there's ever been. The women that they've gotten to play her, I think, have just been spot on every single time and bring different stuff. David Suchet is the character actor's character actor. I mean, he just completely vanishes. And it is all this little man who has, again, he likes the finer things in life.
Yes.
Like, we really establish that very, right away. It's just a quick glance of him, you get that. So when he opens his gift from Chief Inspector Japp and it's these dowdy handmade, like really frumpy mittens, they're totally like the Bernie Sanders at the inauguration mittens.
Yes.
They're completely that. And
they're crafty.
Meanwhile, Poirot is wearing patent leather spats in winter in the countryside. Like, that's who he is.
Yeah.
So he doesn't say a word. I don't even think he blinks his eyes. And yet you can see the utter revulsion on his face.
He puts them back in the wrapping paper right away, like, ew.
He's so disappointed. Like, the whole time he thinks it's going to be this great gift and he's saving it and he's like savoring it, and then he finally opens it and he's so disappointed. I love it.
It's
just like, it's so funny, and yet it's never one of the things that David Suchet said that the Christie family said to him when they chose him. It was a big deal because Agatha Christie famously never ever wanted any of her works, I think in particular the Poirot works, to be on television. She did see the Finney Murder on the Orient Express, which she seemed to have liked, but she was really adamant that he never be on television. So it was kind of a big deal to get permission to do the series. David Suchet said that when he went to kind of see the family, he thought they were going to celebrate and like going to have some champagne with the Christie family. And it was this like sit down, serious, listen you. And the one thing that they said to him, like the main thing was that, the joke is never, you're never laughing at Poirot.
Right.
Which you are a little teeny bit. I mean, he does like walk right up to that line.
He's funny.
But he
unintentionally.
Unintentionally funny. And yet he always is, he's always the smartest guy in the room. So you're not really laughing at him because he's way smarter than you are.
Yeah, he's just quirky. He has his quirks. That's other people have played him, were Charles Laughton, John Malkovich played him. I'm looking at the whole list here. Peter Ustinov.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Malkovich.
It's Tony Randall played him in the 60s. And she probably hated that one. And I think that's, she died in 76, but her family.
Tony Randall.
Yes. Not very Tony Randall. But I think the family's very protective of the image. They said actually their favorite version of this story was this French version. And in the French version, they don't even use they changed all the names, all the details. It's Petit Meurtre en Famille. That's the show in France. That's the best my French I got for you guys. Sorry. But they had their own characters, and he thought that was really interesting and intriguing. But they're very protective of her image, the licensing, everything. And they should be.
Of course they should be. Like talked about, we've had a couple of oddly Christmassy sort of stories and holiday sort of stories, Christmas Carol. And also when we talked about Washington Irving.
Yeah.
These were stories. I mean, again, there was no such thing as intellectual property in the 19th century. And so, especially like with Christmas Carol, the number of plays and completely unsanctioned, unlicensed, they just took the character and did whatever they wanted to do with it. And that was, fortunately, a lot of that didn't survive. But so I can completely understand with Agatha Christie's estate why they are so, so protective. But again, the series that the Agatha Christie, late 20th century television series.
The same thing happens. Pilar gets attacked. And then he eventually, Poirot explains to the family, okay, this is how he died, even with the door locked and everybody's there. And then they're like, all right, but then who did it? He goes, come with me. And then they have to walk across outside. And that's where Superintendent Sugden, he starts explaining, like, I just thought it was funny when you showed up and the butler like was completely startled by your appearance. It was because you resemble him, like Simeon, so much. And then he takes one of the fake mustaches that he bought from the gift shop and he puts it on the big portrait and they could be twins.
With his father. But the similarity is quite striking when one observes the portrait of Monsieur Simeon Lee in the sitting room. En effet, all of the men in the Lee family have a likeness that is most strong.
All right, Poirot. All very clever, no doubt. But who is this murderer we keep hearing about?
Ah, the good Chief Inspector Japin. Always the one to make Poirot stick to his task. Eh bien, Chief Inspector, in order to answer your question, it is necessary that we make a short journey. This was indeed the death of an evil man.
Remember the reputation of Simeon Lee? How he broke the heart of his wife because of his numerous affairs with other women? Remember also his boasts of the illegitimate sons that he had sired.
A man born, you will pardon me, madame, on the wrong side of the blanket can nonetheless inherit the features of his father. His pride, his patience, and his vengeful spirit.
It was my revenge, my pride, my vengeful spirit. And I did not inherit it from Simeon Lee. I got nothing from Simeon Lee, nothing.
And you waited. You and your son followed Simeon Lee. And you waited.
40 years.
You instilled into your son your own rage.
I saved Simeon Lee's life. And he used me. And he stole from me. And he deserted me and my child.
Your son changed his name, settled down to a career, and he also waited. Nothing in this life was so important to either of you but the total destruction of Simeon Lee.
Simeon Lee earned his death as he earned nothing else in his whole life.
And then that's when he says, I did for my mother, because, you know, she was abused by this man and humiliated, and she's alive, by the way, and it's like, yeah, I did. I raised him to do this.
Way to go, son.
You know, the stain is faded on her face, but we know it's her. And she's super proud of him and like, yep, that was us. And we got our revenge. It took 40 plus years, but we did it.
Zero remorse. Yes. Literally not a nanosecond of remorse on anybody's behalf.
But he was so hateful. I mean, it's just.
He was horrible.
Yes.
He was a horrible, horrible man.
And so Pilar, she and Henry, I think, which one does she run off with?
Yes. So in the movie or in the version that we're talking about, there's the character of the second illegitimate son who's pretending to be the partner's son, that character does not exist. Rather, it's one of the sons by the marriage who is sort of a black sheep of the family. He's the one who meets Pilar on the train in the television version and has kind of a shine to her the whole time. And again, he's like, oh, so we're not related.
Yeah.
And so they take off together.
Yeah. And that's the story. And at the very, very end, Poirot exchanges gifts with his friend, Chief Inspector Japp, and he gives him really nice cigars. And Poirot is looking at these gloves, these handmade, you know, gloves, and he's like, oh, what do you think of them? My wife, it took months for her to knit those. He's like, I think I'll just take them to church. I think it's a special.
Special.
They're special. So we're just going to use those for church from now on.
Merry Christmas, Chief Inspector.
Oh, Poirot, you shouldn't have.
I have not yet thanked you for my present.
Well, I hope you like them.
Oh, I do very, very much indeed. Such wonderful colors and such workmanship.
Emily's been knitting away at those blessed gloves for months.
Well, you must tell her how much I thank her and how much her skill it is appreciated.
I will. You're not going to wear them now, then?
No, mon ami. This must be kept for best, huh? I shall wear them only when I go to church.
They just sort of take off, and that's the story. And it's,
which is another Poirot thing about him is that he's Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has therefore this like prime directive morality. He's always going to, you know, take the moral path. He's always going to bring the sinner to justice, which is again, what makes Orient Express such a great, great book.
Right.
But, yeah, so just to church. So it's not like he doesn't go to church. He does.
He goes every Sunday.
He goes very frequently. And we know that it's very important to him to go to church. So, it's delightful. It is just wonderful. The fact that you have Jab in this whole movie just literally for that one scene.
Yeah.
Just like all the buildup to that one kind of gag at the end is totally worth it.
That's what makes the show worth it, though. That's like all those episodes are like that. They have those just little moments that tie them all together.
So
and they're available on BritBox and also on YouTube. I found quite a few people had posted it there.
Oh, yes. You can get it all over the place on YouTube, too.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't say that because then they'll take it.
I know. But pay for it. Pay for it. Or get it on your Libby app or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you can definitely get the books and the audiobooks even on Libby. Yeah. And I mean, what can you say? I book versus movie. They're both fantastic. The book is so fun. Loved it.
It's a draw for me.
It is kind of a draw for me too. I can't pick either. I think the movie, as we're calling it, is such a wonderful, wonderful adaptation of a brilliant, delightful holiday book. How fun to watch it on Christmas. It's great. And the other thing that makes it fun for Christmas, even though it's murder, is the fact that he's such a, the guy who gets it is such a terrible, terrible guy. And you do have a bit of fun that the killers are pleased. Couldn't be happier.
He's going to jail.
Don't care.
Yep.
Yeah, don't care. Yeah, it was me. Yeah, and it took me forever to plan it, by the way. Didn't I do a great job?
And I'd do it again.
Yeah.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Just wonderful. I forgot to mention, we probably talked about it last time that we did Christy, but I'll post it again, if I haven't done it before, in the Facebook group, the fantastic drug history.
Oh, yes.
About yes. Agatha Christie's disappearance with Kirsten Dunst playing Agatha Christie. It is great. I will find it and put it there.
You can look it up if you go to YouTube, and there's all kinds of old news clips about it. It was a big deal.
She was she was always fairly well off, which is really cool. So she, which is why she was able to write about that story. I mean, she just took she had an extraordinary life and also had the gift of weaving that into this brilliant writing that she did, so that she could not only create these worlds like of Poirot among the aristocracy every time, Margot, every time I struggle over that word. And also she lived, out in the country in these villages, and she's able to evoke that whole life and that kind of society as well. Where was I going with that?
Well, the drunk history, she disappears.
Oh yes. So she was a wealthy, well-off woman. So it was a sensational story just for that reason alone. Mm-hmm. And she was already a published author. So it was already kind of an odd duck that she was a wealthy
woman,
best-selling author woman. Yeah. Who disappeared.
Right. And they found her, and she had checked into a hotel, and she did it under husband's mistress's name. She was upset. They divorced. She got remarried. She had a very happy life. Like I said, she went traveling all over the world. She went to Hawaii to learn how to surf 30 years before the Beach Boys wrote about stuff like that. I mean, this woman lived big, and that's what's so exciting about her.
And she just understood people so well. Mm-hmm. And then also, tells an amazing story, a riveting. Her books are so fun. I mean, they're just one of those things you just devour. You just can't wait to read the next one and the next one and the next one. How fun to watch this on Christmas. I may watch it again on Christmas.
I know. I just super enjoyed it.
So we talked about, speaking of Christmas.
Yes.
It's next week. I'm going to be out of town for a bit, but so we may take next week off. However, we don't want to be gone too long. So we're discussing maybe doing a little live event for our Facebook group.
Yes. We'll do stick to the, if you join our Facebook group, we can give you the details. We're going to come up with something to do live. We'll figure out the day and the time. We'll have cocktails and we'll talk about, your ideas for books and movies, what we're thinking of doing in the new year, how your year was going, what were your favorite episodes, that kind of thing. So we're going to set that up. And then I think we figured out our next book and movie. So we'll either do it, probably the last week in December we'll cover it. So it gives us enough time to go through it. And it's The Phantom Toll Booth. Yes. I don't know what this is about. And Margot was shocked because this is like one of her favorite things.
It was one of my favorite childhood books. Yes.
And someone in the Facebook group.
And it was a listener suggestion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. From the Facebook group. So yes, please, please reach out to us. And that's going to be the next one in January. It's kind of a mishmash of ideas that we have, celebrations or whatever. February, it's African American History Month. So if you have ideas for that. March is musicals in March.
That's going to be a new one. We've never done that before.
I know.
I am really looking forward to it.
Well, we did it last year.
Did we do musicals?
Yeah, we did musicals in March last year. I know. These
my brain.
Yeah, we did Cabaret. You can go check them out. It's Cabaret.
That's right. We did Cabaret.
My Fair Lady. Right. Yeah, we had a whole.
Oh, yeah. So we did.
It's okay. The days and weeks.
It's the
just
second annual.
Yes.
Second annual
musicals in March. So those are the next few months. Keep thinking about those. Next October, the scary books. You know how this all works. It's the same. And you can find us at all the things. Please send us your suggestions. Once again, the email is bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And Margot, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com. And all of my social media callouts are @shesnotyourmama. And where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my site is brooklynfitchick.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Happy holidays. We'll be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags Lady Pod Squad and Podern Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to PATREON, and look for Book vs. Movie Podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. You can follow Margot D at Brooklyn Fitchick on social media, and Margot P at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.